My guest at this time is Larry Haas, who served as spokesman for the Office of Management and Budget during the administration of President Bill Clinton. He has joined us many times over the years to discuss breaking economic news and key economic debates in this country, and that's where we are right now on the issue of the minimum wage, which is currently at the level of $7.25 nationally. The president over the next few years would like to bump it up to $10.10 per hour. The president and others argue that it's important for folks making the minimum wage to be able to be out of poverty and be able to kick in some money to keep the economy going as well. Critics suggest that raising the minimum wage will force employers to reduce the number of jobs at a time when the nation can least afford it. And Larry, thanks so much for being with us.
Happy to be here. Nice to see you, Greg.
You bet. And as you know, those are basically the arguments here. Let's start with the president's position. He says that we have too many people barely scraping to get by, people who are working really hard, and they still can't get out of poverty because the minimum wage isn't high enough. So he wants to bump it up nearly $3 over the next couple of years. What do you make of his argument here?
Well, you know, the Congressional Budget Office just came out with a report about a proposal just like that, to bump it up to $10.10 at some point, presumably over the next 3 years. And what's really startling about this report is that while it acknowledges some job loss, the corresponding benefits so greatly outweigh the cost that it almost looks like it's hard not to do it. I mean, yes, CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, says that there would be a job loss of about 500,000 jobs. But at the same time, it says that it would lift 900,000 people out of poverty. So that in and of itself is more people than would lose their jobs. And beyond that, it actually has a direct benefit to 16.5 million low-wage workers, not just those who would get a higher minimum wage, but those who are making near a minimum wage, and the employer would naturally bump up their salary as well. When you kind of count all of that in, boy, it certainly looks like a winner to me.
Well, let's break this down a little bit. First of all, in terms of the job losses, 500,000 is the projection, with the potential of it being somewhere between 500,000 and 1 million. If you factor in those people, I don't know about all of them, but certainly some of them would have families. Do you not get close to the 900,000 who would be negatively impacted, while the others would be positively impacted?
Well, I understand the point that you're making. We are talking about, and I'm not minimizing it, but we are talking about costs versus benefits. And just in raw number terms, even if we talk about, as you say, closer to 1 million, as offset by the close to 1 million who would rise above the poverty level, and you consider that to be somewhat of a wash. And again, I'm not minimizing the job loss, but if you consider just the raw dollars and this being somewhat of a wash, you look and just go to the second level of this and see all the other low-wage workers who would get a benefit out of this as employers naturally raised their wages. 16.5 million people. You know, at the end of the day, you look at any proposal and you sort of say, okay, what's the good, what's the bad, and where does this come out? And I just have to tell you that while I don't minimize the job loss, I look at these raw numbers and I have to say, you know what, this would be a net benefit to society and to working people writ large.
Larry, you've probably looked much more closely at these numbers over the years than I have. Who is making the minimum wage? On the one hand, you have, for those trying to raise it, they talk about the working mom taking on two or three jobs just to be able to pay the bills, put food on the table. On the other side of the debate, a lot of folks say a lot of these are jobs for teenagers. These are perhaps people that don't have a lot of dependents, and it's meant to be a stepping stone job. It isn't meant to be their career, although it certainly is for some of the people at that wage level. So how should we interpret who's really affected by this?
Well, those who oppose a minimum wage increase tend to overstate the number of so-called teenagers who are just working side jobs, and this isn't really their livelihood, and we really don't need to give them a boost. But the fact of the matter is, and I can't break it down in percentage terms, but the fact of the matter is that a very large share of minimum wage workers are those very people that you referred to earlier. It's the single mom with the kid or two or three who's trying to scrape by, who may have more than one job, who's having trouble making ends meet with the child care expenses that she needs to pay. And those are really the people we've got to worry about in this kind of a economy where we see such long-term unemployment, where we see such lingering unemployment from the Great Recession. I mean, anyone who thinks this is really about teenagers is just missing the boat. It doesn't mean that none of these people are teenagers, but we really can't overstate this. This is about real working people trying to raise their families or make ends meet for themselves.
If, in fact, they need that bump in pay to meet their daily obligations to themselves and their families and so forth, how much are we talking about additional money being pumped into the economy as a result of this?
Well, you know, it's hard to quantify, but you do know that there are, you know, direct effects, and then there are indirect effects, spillover effects, secondary, tertiary effects. So you have the minimum wage worker who's got more money in his or her pocket. They would tend to be able to afford more of the so-called necessities at the local store, which makes more money, which can hire more people. They have more money in their pocket, and so on and so on and so on. Again, I can't quantify it, but this is something that does ripple through the economy and has secondary and tertiary effects that are important for overall economic growth.
Those on the right would argue that there is an artificial price put on labor at that point, and that's why you'll see the job losses, and that would be their argument for why we're getting the CBO number on job creation that we are. In terms of other ways to boost income, to boost job creation, that sort of thing, their argument would probably be to reduce corporate taxes and remove some regulations here and there. They'd probably throw Obamacare in there as well to create more better-paying jobs thrown out there as well, and creating what they like to call economic opportunity rather than economic equality. What do you make of their general approach to all this?
Well, I don't necessarily disagree with all of their approaches. I do think that the corporate tax is too high by way of international competitiveness. I do think that there are always opportunities to reduce regulation. On Obamacare, I think that, frankly, their concerns are overstated and in many ways misconstrue what's happening. But just because we have these other possible ways of promoting economic growth and spurring jobs doesn't mean that we should dismiss this one. And the fact of the matter is that Obamacare is not going to be repealed. The fact of the matter is we're not going to see tax reform, I think, anytime soon just because of the politics on the Hill. The administration will either reduce regulations or they won't. This is the issue before us at the moment. Congress can act. The president can sign it into law. And I think that the case is very compelling. Whether we do any of the other things that would spur growth and create jobs, we should do this.
Larry, let me have you take off your economics hat in our last 30 seconds. Put on your political hat. Will it happen anytime soon?
Well, I think that the Republicans, particularly in the House, are pretty dead set against it. So I don't think that the prospects are great for it at the moment. But I will tell you this. With these impacts that go beyond the 900,000 people who would be lifted out of poverty, they go to the 16.5 million workers who would be indirectly benefited by this proposal. I'm not sure that where the Republicans are is a great place to be. And in previous debates, Republicans have tended to come around. And I think this is something that Democrats can run on in 2014 and maybe weaken Republican opposition.
We will watch and we will see. Larry, as always, great to have you with us. Thanks for your time and your insight.
Thanks for calling, Greg.
You bet. Larry Haas is the former spokesman for the Clinton White House Office of Management and Budget. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.